He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and I hate to disappoint those rooting for frostbite and functional paralysis on Sunday night, but the latest weather report says conditions will not be historically cold in Kansas City. Sorry. The Chiefs and the Patriots will be playing in temperatures around 20 degrees with a wind chill making it seem around 15, yet warmer than the sub-zero weather originally forecast. And honestly, don't we want it this way? I want to enjoy this classic clash matching Patrick Mahomes, the new face of the NFL, the quarterbacking magician, against the greatest of all time, geezer Tom Brady, and the defensive schemes of Bill Belichick, all on a dry track in the heartland. I don't want another ice bowl. You don't either.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
So, no ice and no snow actually is good news for the Chiefs, who would have much more to lose in wicked conditions because of the possible effect on Mahomes. And while Belichick the mad scientist is concocting elements in a game plan that Mahomes and Andy Reid never have seen before, the Chiefs do have the same weapons who burned the Patriots for 40 points earlier this season. And it is no small factor that this game is at Arrowhead Stadium, as the Patriots, under Belichick, do not fare well as a road playoff team. In fact, they suck as a road playoff team. They have not won an AFC playoff game away from Foxborough since 2007, losing four of their last five, and they average 11 fewer points on the road. Plus, that creepy aura that freaks out opposing teams at Gillette Stadium, you know, headsets going dead in the middle of a game, the possibility of spies or deflated footballs, none of that comes into play in Kansas City. Yes, Reid has been a playoff disappointment, 2-4 in KC with two blown 18-point leads. And I know the Patriots can exploit a porous Chiefs run defense with Sony Michel, who has been a revelation in his rookie season. But I'm also seeing a fearsome Kansas City pass rush that I think will rough up Brady just as it banged around Andrew Luck last weekend. And while this will be no shootout, I think it's another Mahomes clinic with his arm and his legs as he caps one of the greatest quarterbacking seasons ever with a Super Bowl berth. Here is Mahomes, who impresses me with his poise and his savvy as much as his extraordinary ability.
There's always pressure to win in these scenarios. Whenever it's an elimination game, it's win or go home, you always know there's an intensity that you have to bring. But I think the best thing about this team is we can lean on each other. There's not one person that have to do it all. It's something where it's every single week. It was D. Will last week that stepped up and played a huge game. The offensive line played great. And it's every single week. The defense played great last week. And, I mean, everybody steps up and just leans on each other. And that's what makes us such a great team. It's made us so successful this year is there's not one person on one person's shoulders every single week. It's who can step up this week and who's going to make the play.
Not that Brady ever would shy from a cold weather classic, having won his share. The thing is, he's won just about all of them in Foxborough. Yep, I don't think you can deflate a football at Arrowhead Stadium without somebody seeing it happening. Brady is the established GOAT despite Deflategate, based on his remarkable precision and championship pedigree over almost two decades. And Andy Reid certainly is wary of the damage Brady still can do at age 41. 41.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any decline, and I haven't seen him getting slower. So, I mean, he's not that's not his deal. He's not going to run and do all that unless he has to. But, I mean, he's as accurate. He sees things better than even when he did when he was younger. So he sees I'm wearing glasses. He doesn't, right? So the age thing hasn't hit him. He's an amazing guy that way.
But in the 2019 version of the National Football League, Mahomes is a dual threat for the times, if not for the ages, and he'll simply make more plays all night long than Brady, whose supporting cast remains limited. Chiefs, 31. Patriots, 23. As for the other game, and Saints-Rams is the other game, the proper prelim for the NFC Championship, the issue isn't gumbo this week as much as what that gumbo might represent. Marcus Peters has had a bad season as an embattled cornerback for the Rams. When the Saints outlasted the Rams earlier this season, Peters traded trash talk with the feisty Saints coach Sean Payton. Then Peters promised the teams would meet again in the playoffs to, quote, have a little bowl of gumbo together, unquote. Well, here they are. But I'll tell you this, Marcus, if you don't clean up your act, cover receivers better, and avoid confrontations with opponents and fans, you could be goat soup on Sunday, especially if Peyton can create a matchup where Peters has to cover the Saints' dazzling receiver, Michael Thomas, who burned Peters the last time. Here was Peters trying to downplay the gumbo talk on orders from his coach, Sean McVay, but Peters is an angry man.
Y'all do what y'all gonna do with it. That's cool. I mean, yeah. Like I say, man, I got the utmost respect for the Saints and their head coach and the organization, you know. But things like that, man, I'm gonna be ready to play just as much as they're gonna be ready to play. We trying to play a game. We ain't trying to talk about no gumbo. We can talk about all that stuff afterwards.
How
he's pushing and it's, I mean, it's not gonna get no further. I am having fun. We're talking about it right now. We're laughing about it, man. I don't think that is something that we need to be pushing towards that's over the top of the NFC championship. Let's push that we got the number one team in the NFC versus number two team in the NFC, and we're trying to see what we're trying to send to the Super Bowl.
How would you evaluate your season?
I think we ain't done yet.
But you personally?
I think we ain't done yet.
Peyton, for his part, is trying to make nice with Peters. Sean's a smart guy. He's not going to get involved in this gumbo nonsense.
Sean, you said you heard Marcus Peters' comments. Any comment on that?
No, listen, he's someone that we grew real close to in the evaluation process. He's from the Bay Area. I used to recruit, you know, that area where he went to high school. And he's someone that we came close to drafting him. You know, the year we took Andrus, one of our goals going into that draft was Pete and Peters, and that's the truth. So I have great respect for him, and it was all good.
However, an important point, this time the Rams can use the superior and healthy Aqib Talib to cover Thomas. And the Rams' defense, having to deal with running backs Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, is coming off an excellent game in shutting down Zeke Elliott. And the Rams in that Superdome Nuthouse did return from a 21-point deficit in that last game. And they now also have the human bowling ball C.J. Anderson as a complement to a healthy Todd Gurley, who I think could have a huge game on that fast indoor track. I am one of the few people picking against the Saints this week, but they did lose their star defensive tackle, Sheldon Rankins, and they were lucky not to be down 21-0 against the Eagles at home. I know Drew Brees will be a handful as always, but do not be surprised if Aaron Donald and the Rams beat him up a little. I have Rams 27, Saints 24, and thank God we won't have to hear this Choppa-style video from the New Orleans locker room anymore.
Hey, hey, hey.
It should be obvious now that Major League Baseball is toying with the players and their union in the full-scale dissing of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Rather than bidding for two MVP-caliber players who are only 26, the general objective this offseason has been trying to impose an unofficial salary cap, making both of these stars accept deals below market value when MLB continues to bring in record revenues of more than $10 billion annually. Gee, I thought the idea, at least in the major markets, was competing to sign the very best free agents and trying your damnedest to win a championship. Nope. The New York Yankees, a $4 billion franchise, are not interested. The LA Dodgers, a $3 billion franchise, are not interested, despite $500 million in annual revenue. The Cubs, with that ATM machine ballpark on the north side of Chicago, are suddenly crying poor. This smacks of a contrived strategy to reverse the escalation of player salaries, also known as collusion, the C word. And in the middle of it all, of course, my favorite guy on planet Earth, the despicable owner of the Chicago White Sox, Mr. Jerry Reinsdorf. You've seen these reports by Reinsdorf's media bobos that the White Sox have a standing seven-year, $175 million offer to Machado. But Dan Lozano, who is Machado's agent, released a scathing statement suggesting the White Sox are planting those padded inaccurate numbers and that they actually have little interest in signing Machado. In other words, Lozano is accusing Reinsdorf of lying. You want my Reinsdorf lie stories? I will be here all day. This would be consistent with how Reinsdorf always has done business, conniving, misleading, making fans think the player, the agent, are the bad guys for rejecting an offer while he lies to the media in inflating the numbers of the actual offer. That's classic Jerry. Gerrymandering, as I always used to say. He's a terrible owner. He's a worse human being. You want examples? You know, people don't write about this nationally. They're scared of this guy. I was never scared of him. He's just an asshole. That's the beauty of podcasting. You know, I can say that. He prioritized a labor impasse in the 90s over a possible championship. he was on the rampage about a war with the players when his team was in first place, a rarity, by the way, with the White Sox. He inherited Michael Jordan, inherited him, and then refused to renegotiate Jordan's eight-year deal that instantly became obsolete in the 90s during that dynasty era when other NBA teams were renegotiating deals for their stars. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, nope. Michael, you got to stick with your eight-year, $24 million contract. Oh, what an asshole. Reinsdorf dismantled the dynasty before its time. Why? Two more championships left in that. Oh, he wanted to build his own dynasty. Oh, and how has that gone in the 20 years since then? Oh, God. He disregarded the Camden Yards blueprints and built a hideous ballpark. 2 years after it was built, you realize, my God, there's a new one in Baltimore and Cleveland, all these cool places. What the hell happened here on the south side? And now he's in his mid-80s. Reinsdorf wants to make his mark not on the baseball field, where the White Sox haven't reached the playoffs in 10 years and have tanked in a youth movement that hasn't made any progress. No, he wants another labor war. And if you recall the last time Reinsdorf went on his hawk rampage, the players did go on strike. Baseball lost a World Series in 1994, and the sport needed years to recover. And when fans did return, it was to watch a phony home run derby fueled by steroids. Reinsdorf, Bud Selig, complicit, and yet, just turned their heads. They comment on everything, but never steroids, no. To counter this collusion, I hope Philadelphia Phillies owner John Middleton is ready to be, quote, a little bit stupid, unquote, about spending money, as he said in November. Yes, we've heard whispers here that he might sign both Harper and Machado. Go for it, John. That way you make your paying customers happy in a very demanding city where the Phillies haven't won in eons. And if Reinsdorf and the colluding owners don't like it, screw them. As for the Dodgers, they're spending, yeah, but not on players. They're spending on ways to engage better with the younger fans. They're talking about putting in nightclubs at Dodger Stadium. Yeah, let's go 1:30 in the morning. Let's go party at the Dodger Stadium Club. They're talking about Elon Musk-style subways into Chavez Ravine. I would go for that, actually. They're talking about advanced analytics on your phone, piped into your phone during the game at the stadium. You know what? If the Dodgers asked younger people what they want right now, you know what the kids would say? Sign Bryce Harper, please. But the Dodgers don't want to spend $300 million on a player, though they'll certainly take that $8 billion for a flawed TV deal that blacks out games in 70% of the vast L.A. market. If I were a fan of the Dodgers, I'd be boycotting. But they're hooked. They'll be back 4 million strong, even though they can't watch the game on TV. When we rehash the dynasty of the Golden State Warriors, we will look at the addition of DeMarcus Cousins in one of two ways. Either he gave them the low post presence they've never had and helps them win a three-peat, or he contributed to their downfall with recurring health issues and a wildly disruptive presence on and off the court. I say that Boogie helps them more than he hurts them because of that Warriors culture. They won't let him be a jerk. And though we'd be wrong to expect the old dominant Boogie after his long recovery from Achilles tendon surgery, I think he's going to play just enough minutes not to endanger that Achilles tendon. Steve Kerr and Bob Myers will be very smart about this. Everybody knows this injury has ruined some careers and leaves doubt in Cousins' case because of his massive size. So he's just going to have to deal with fewer shots, fewer minutes. But even in spurts, Cousins is a potential force who gives them five all-stars in the starting lineup, a comedy of riches, a big man who can roll in the paint and step outside and knock down threes with that sweet stroke of his, as if the champs didn't have enough mind-boggling dimensions with the Steph Curry bombs from outer space, the Klay Thompson shooting blitzes, Kevin Durant from everywhere, the Curry-Durant pick and rolls. Have you seen Draymond Green lately? Tons of assists, very few turnovers. Now, on top of it all, you have Boogie Cousins. But it is paramount that Boogie, who is accustomed to dominating the ball, grasp the importance of selflessness. Hall of Fame players there have had to sacrifice on this team, and if he only gets, you know, a handful of shots a game, he'd better chill out and realize there are fabulous rewards here if he behaves. One, a championship after playing on bad teams much of his career, and two, a lucrative new deal elsewhere in free agency if he does stay healthy and fit in well. For now, Cousins saying all the right things, and the acclimation period has been smooth. For instance, he already has said he knows he'll get fewer shots, and he does admire the passion of his teammates.
It just shows that your heart is in it. You know, when I'm going to battle every night, I want all my teammates to have their heart into the game. And it shows that you care. It shows that it means something to you. I'm not really a fan of the guys that are emotionless on the floor. So I appreciate guys like Kay. I appreciate every guy in that locker room because they all play with emotions in the game. So those are the type of guys I want to go to war with.
What did you learn about this organization the past few months that you didn't know before you signed with Golden State?
They actually do miss shots.
Obviously, if Curry, Durant, Thompson, and Green like him, they'll be looking to feed him the ball starting Friday night against the L.A. Clippers at Staples Center. I will be there. But who knows where and when Cousins might blow up? Yell at teammates, coaches. I think they'll nip that in the bud, but you've seen that switch flip. It's possible at any time. You already have one volcano in Draymond. You don't need two volcanoes, but Klay Thompson is expecting the very best side of Boogie.
Just be himself. I've been blessed to play with DeMarcus two go-rounds with USA team, and when he's focused, when he's doing the little things, he's the best big man in the game. I can't wait till we get him. He adds a whole new dimension to our team. He gives us a low block presence we haven't had in a while, and we can throw to him at any point to get hot. And with the floor spacing our team creates, he's going to be a monster.
If all goes well, you are looking at the greatest offensive juggernaut in the history of basketball. A mesmerizing attack, impossible to guard. Can you imagine this team if they're meshing in May, projecting that team with Boogie Cousins down low or hitting threes? Oh, my God. And seeing how they just went into Denver, scored 51 in the first quarter and won by 31, Denver the best team in the West so far, and seeing how the Warriors have won 8 of 9, could it be the season is just starting for a historic team that somehow is capable of turning on its A game whenever it so desires? Boogie gives people just one more reason to dislike Golden State, as Cousins said in this interview with ESPN's Rachel Nichols.
Really pay attention to storylines. I mean, they're going to say what they have to say. They're going to have their opinions. We're the most hated team in sports. So
you think you're the most hated team in sports? I would say that there are a lot of people in this country who love to hate the Yankees or the Cowboys.
Well, put us up there. I would say the Warriors are for sure. You know, they hate Kevin. They hate me. I think the only guy that really likes is Steph. They may hate him as well. They hate Draymond. But, I mean, it is what it is. So, I can't worry about that.
And despite pleas from the basketball media not to fire Luke Walton, Magic Johnson is going to do what he wants as boss man of the Lakers. This is the same coach killer who once ran out poor Paul Westhead in Magic's early years as a player, so it's inevitable that Walton will be blamed for not developing the talent that Johnson and Rob Pelinka have accrued, rather than the very strong possibility that the likes of Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram were management mistakes. They aren't very good, and that's on Johnson and Pelinka. Imagine if the Lakers had drafted Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell with the number 2 pick instead of Ball. Imagine if Ingram had been included in a package for Paul George. Imagine LeBron, Paul George, and Jason Tatum. Reach for the vomit bag. It's Staples. Yeah, those were Magic and Pelinka blunders. And while owner Jeannie Buss is a big fan of Walton, Magic has her ear, always has had her ear, and I think at some point we'll convince her that Mark Jackson will do a better job. Yeah, that Mark Jackson. The problem is that these supposedly precious young pieces aren't very attractive now to the New Orleans Pelicans if they choose to trade Anthony Davis. Kyle Kuzma, yeah, nobody else. And the Celtics, who may be looking for a dramatic chemistry change given their issues this season, can put together a better package for Davis than the Lakers can. This is a tough job for a coach, any coach having to integrate LeBron with the kids, and now that James is dealing with the worst injury of his career just after turning 34, while joined on the sidelines by Rajon Rondo, Walton becomes an easy fall guy, even as the likes of Rondo and Kuzma rave about his performance amid adversity. I'm not convinced yet that Walton is a real good coach, but you've got to consider the weak hand he has been dealt here. Jackson might relate to the players better, but he's not going to magically turn Ingram and Ball and the other kids into all-stars. Here is Walton addressing a question about job security, which first came up in November when Magic reamed him out about lacking a reliable system.
How do you personally take like speculation about the future, reports out there about your job here with the Lakers right now? How do you deal with that?
I focus on what's important, and what's important to our team is getting better and figuring out ways that we can we can score the ball, figuring out ways to make it difficult on the other teams defensively, scouting reports, our players getting better. That's where my time is going.
All of which leads to the conclusion I've had since LeBron arrived in L.A. He is finished winning championships or even contending for championships. And unless Durant comes next summer, which is not likely, this is the supporting cast he probably is stuck with, which is why he's more visible these days as a Hollywood mogul. If you can't win on the court, at least you can win the power lunch at Felix. And LeBron's agent, Rich Paul, says James might not be back anytime soon. And if the Lakers or their fans don't like it, Paul dropped a couple of expletives for their benefit. And for somebody who could not wait to flee the control-freak culture of LeBron in Cleveland, how fascinating that Kyrie Irving turned to King James with an apology, no less, after his outbursts at Celtics coach Brad Stevens and teammate Gordon Hayward. Kyrie Irving apologizing to LeBron? Huh?
It was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people. And Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship. And it was hard for him. And sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world. And like I said, only few are meant for it or chosen for it. And, you know, I feel like the best person to call was him because, you know, he's been in the situation. You know, he's been there with me where I've been the young guy of, you know, being a 22-year-old kid and, you know, wanting everything. Learn everything right now, you know, coming off an all-star year starting and then, you know, this heck of a presence comes back and now I got to adjust my game to this guy. And, you know, take it personal, but at the end of the day, he just wants what's best and he has a legacy he wants to leave and he has a window he wants to capture. So I think what that brought me back to is like, all right, how do I get the best out of this group of the success they had last year and then helping them realize what it takes to win a championship.
To his credit, Irving had 18 assists in leading the Celtics over Toronto in what could be an Eastern Conference playoff preview. But some advice for Kyrie here. Stop the drama show. You're acting like LeBron now. You seem to be plotting what you're doing in these press conferences. That's what LeBron does. He's always trying to play a mind game. I think you were playing a mind game here. Kyrie, shut up and play basketball. You are in Boston. This is the town you wanted. They don't like this drama crap. They just want you to win. Maximize your ability. And yes, only President Donald Trump would politicize a White House visit by a championship college football team by serving fast food. And of course, Trump's numerous critics assailed him for using the government shutdown to bring in a buffet from McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, and Domino's. But you know what? The Clemson players devoured every last bite. And if they loved it, isn't it all that matters? Let's hope Trump doesn't bring in a smorgasbord from Dunkin' Donuts when the Boston Red Sox arrive at the White House for their World Series title ceremony. This is a more delicate event, thanks to Trump's comments about Hurricane Maria, which did not go over well with Red Sox manager Alex Cora, a native of Puerto Rico. Attendance not mandatory for the February 15th visit by the Red Sox, but Cora says he's going to, quote, use my platform the right way. I'm going to represent 4 million people from back home, unquote. Hey, I would show up, regardless of politics, I would have my shot at Trump. I would have my shot at saying, shaking his hand and going, I don't like your politics if I didn't like his politics, or I don't like you if I didn't like him. I don't know why these guys boycott. Wouldn't you want your shot to verbalize your frustrations in front of Trump? I think that's what Alex is going to do. He will not embarrass anybody. Here was Trump, by the way, speaking to the media about that fast food feast.
I like it all. I like it all. It's all good stuff. Great, great American food. And it'll be very interesting to see at the end of this evening how many are left.
Do you prefer McDonald's or Wendy's?
I like them all.
That's a tough question.
If it's American, I like it. It's all American stuff. So, but it's good stuff. And we have the national champion team, as you know, Clemson Tigers. And they had a fantastic game against Alabama. And they're all here. They're right outside the room. And I think we're going to let you see them. But I'll bet you as much food as we have. We have pizzas. We have 300 hamburgers. Many, many French fries, all of our favorite foods. I want to see what's here when we leave, because I don't think it's going to be much. The reason we did this is because of the shutdown. We want to make sure that everything is right. So we sent out, we got this, and we have some wonderful people working at the White House. They helped us out with this. And I will say the Republicans are really, really sticking together. It's great to see because we need border security. We have to have it. We have to have it. No doubt about it. Should have happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And it's going to happen now. Going to happen now. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy your food.
And if Clemson wants more to eat, Ayesha Curry, Steph Curry's wife, has invited the Tigers to dine at her San Francisco restaurant for, quote, a real feast, unquote. That, of course, a shot at Trump. The White House ceremony used to just be beautiful. Now it's just thick with politics. Yuck. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, I'm sticking with the Chiefs and the Rams. I assume you are sticking with the Patriots and the Saints. But isn't America thoroughly sick of the Patriots by now? Don't we want some new Super Bowl blood?
Jay, I'm sure new Super Bowl blood would be wonderful. It would be wonderful. Rams-Chiefs would be wonderful. Rams-Saints even would be wonderful. But guess what? Not going to happen. Saints-Pats, Jay, I'm sticking with it. I understand everyone talking about, like, what is it called? The Arctic Blast, the Arctic Siege, the Arctic Thunder coming down in Kansas City. I mean, I don't think that that's going to be much of a worry for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in the Pats. I could be wrong. Patrick Mahomes and those Chiefs could just light it up. But come on. We really believe that's going to happen? That's the same as believing that the Saints are going to somehow not be the Saints. And Sean McVay and the Rams and Jared Goff and Todd Gurley paired with C.J. Anderson in a double-team running attack is going to get past the Saints. I don't buy it. Saints pass. I'm sticking with it, Jay.
Chris, forecast for me the impact that Boogie Cousins will make for the Warriors the rest of the season. Good, bad, ugly, what will it be? I say he'll fit right in, giving them the low post-scoring dimension they have lacked. And if he stays healthy, the rest of the NBA will gulp hard. Go!
Even if he doesn't stay healthy, aren't we still picking the Warriors? So if you throw Cousins on top of that, and as Klay Thompson says, he's one of the best big men, if not the best big men when he's on, and the way he would work within that team, of course, yeah, that's not good for the rest of the NBA. But either way, I don't see the Warriors losing. I'm just in one of those moods, Jay. I'm going with the grain, I guess.
And, Chris, should we as Americans be offended that President Donald Trump fed fast food to the Clemson Tigers?
They're college kids. They eat fast food. Does that mean that they wanted something nicer? I doubt that that even passed through their head because they were probably excited to go to the White House. Had nothing. I continue to be puzzled, especially when it comes to the college kids and the college teams, how anybody is thinking that this is about politics. No, they're going to go to the White House no matter who's the president because they get to go to the White House and celebrate winning the national championship. I understand everyone wants to make a big deal about how this was so horrible because of our feelings or many people's feelings about President Trump, and that's fine. I get that. But guess what? A lot of people eat fast food every day. That's why there's fast food restaurants everywhere. And if you talk about the middle of the country, and if you talk about certain places in the South and stuff, there's a reason why those restaurants do very well. So when people like Michael Strahan want to say, oh, well, he'll pay for the kids to have lobsters in New York City, maybe that's not what they want. Maybe they just want to go to the White House and have a good time. And the fact that there was a Big Mac or a Pizza Hut pizza, while it may not be the cup of tea of many, guess what? They enjoyed themselves. So no, we shouldn't be offended. We should let it go and move on.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Rapper Travis Scott did speak to Colin Kaepernick about whether to play the Super Bowl halftime show, and I'm pleased to report that Scott, though Kaepernick did not support him, ignored Kaepernick and agreed to perform, unlike many of the acts who have rejected these offers in support of Kaepernick and other players who have taken a knee during the national anthem to protest racial injustice. At some point here, Kaepernick might want to realize that the NFL has moved on without him. TV ratings up, the games are exciting and close, new stars such as Mahomes have brought excitement, business is good. The anthem protests are a proud and productive part of the past now, and Scott didn't agree to perform until the NFL pledged to make a $500,000 donation to the Dream Corps charity. So yes, Travis Scott, dream of his life to go and perform at the Super Bowl, NFL making a big donation, why not? So we have Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boi doing the show. Not exactly the Rolling Stones, Prince, U2, and Paul McCartney, but hey, at least we are going to have a halftime show. ESPN analyst Scottie Pippen, one of those athletes who hated the media during his career before becoming a media guy. Oh, a Mariotti aside here. Once I'm in an elevator at the Plaza Hotel in New York. Pippen comes in. He's with all of his family members, you know, parents, brothers, sisters. I mean, it was me and the Pippins. And that was a 20-second elevator ride that was very uncomfortable because Scotty said something to me. It was nasty. He was mad at me. I was in the middle of one of those Knicks-Bulls series where he didn't play well every other game, and I had to write it, and he wasn't happy, and they're just staring at me. Woo! What if that elevator had been stuck? Anyway, Scottie Pippen thinks Zion Williamson should leave Duke right now, shut down his college basketball career immediately. Why? Because Zion, according to Pippen, already has proved he's the number one pick in the NBA draft, so why risk an injury? Has it occurred to Scottie that maybe Zion might actually like the idea of winning a national title, playing at Cameron, playing at Duke? Maybe he likes attending a class or two. Maybe he likes mingling with other students. You know, the college experience. Scotty, maybe he likes it. And Chicago Bears coach Matt Nagy, the presumptive NFL coach of the year in his first season, says he will not rule out pursuing running back Kareem Hunt, who was last seen in a video kicking and shoving a woman in the hallway of his Cleveland residence. Hunt is on the NFL's exempt list and would have to be reinstated to sign with another team, but Nagy has called Hunt and says he believes in second chances. I would say Nagy's timing is askew here, way too soon for this, and it clashes rather awkwardly with his rip job on kicker Cody Parkey. Everybody in America feels sorry for Cody Parkey. He of the double doink. He appeared on a national TV show talking about that missed kick that ended Chicago's season, and Nagy excoriated Parkey for going on the show, saying he was selfish. So I'm going to try to get this straight. Nagy is defending Kareem Hunt, but ripping Parkey? What? And Adam Gase, who became a meme for his bizarre bug-eyed eyeball-popping expressions during his opening Jets press conference, has no time for social media BS. ESPN host Dan Le Batard, who might want to grow up one of these years or decades, pushed Gase on the topic to the delight of Le Batard's cackling young producers. I saw the video. Here is the sound.
What happened at the introductory press conference? Like, what can you tell us about? Did you know that it became a meme and people were putting tacos around your face so that, like,
yeah,
did
I
you?
I don't have Twitter, Instagram. I don't read the internet. I don't watch TV. Like, I don't, all that stuff doesn't, it's irrelevant to me. To me, it's pollution of the brain. I really don't care. Like, that's how I operate. I'm here to do one thing, and that's to help this organization win. So all that other stuff is irrelevant to me.
Was it irrelevant to the other people who were management at that press conference? Did anyone say anything to you, or did they leave it alone?
Nobody said anything to me.
When you left the room, did you feel like you'd won the press conference?
I don't care.
Okay.
All I know is it doesn't. Is it? Did we win any games because of it?
No, that's true. No.
Nobody cares.
That's a good. It is. It's a great answer. I hope you keep that with the New York tabloids. I hope you keep sticking your face in that buzzsaw because that'll be a fun fight to watch.
I'm not trying to fight anybody. I'm just trying to do everything I can to win games.
I feel like you're a guy who laughs, though, and I think you should watch the taco video because I think you might think it's funny. Can I, like, send it to you?
No. I don't want it. I don't want it.
Okay. I mean, it's just it's not a pollution of the brain. It's just a little bit of litter. It's like, it's just a little bit of litter.
Don't need it.
Don't need it. Okay. Fair enough. Adam.
I'll give you a Jay Cutler on that one. Don't care.
I liked Gase's response, and I think it goes one of two ways for him in New York. Either he develops Sam Darnold, goes to the playoffs, and becomes a hit as your typical nutball New Yorker, or they absolutely crucify him and he's gone in 2 years.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN. Too smart for the internet. and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
The NCAA refers to it as the transfer portal. I call it the latest example of college football resembling professional sports, except for one rather large detail. The athletes are not being paid in this version of free agency. The landscape of the 2019 season changed instantly this week when Jalen Hurts, as his father suggested last year, became the biggest free agent in college football history, leaving Alabama to sign with Oklahoma. It's the latest in a wave of high-profile transfers involving five-star players who lose out in quarterbacking competitions and seek starting jobs elsewhere. Justin Fields from Georgia to Ohio State, Tate Martell from Ohio State to Miami, Kelly Bryant from Clemson to Missouri, Brandon Wimbush from Notre Dame to Central Florida. And in Hurts' case, it sets up the season's most powerful storyline. Can he go to Oklahoma, where Lincoln Riley's last two quarterbacks have won Heisman trophies, and win his own Heisman while possibly facing, yes, you've got it, Nick Saban, Tua Tagovailoa, and Alabama in the playoff? It is great theater. But while you always want young people to have the avenue to maximize opportunities, this does smack of big business, too big. And until the powers that be start acknowledging that players deserve at least a small piece of this multi-billion-dollar pie, the transfer portal is just another way of mocking amateurism. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.
Hell yes, hell.